You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, good evening, young lady. What did you think about our recent journey to St. Louis, Missouri, where we attended the International Association of Law Enforcement Educators and Trainers Association?
I really enjoyed the conference, and I enjoyed having a booth there and forwarding our ETC forensic company, which went really well for us. And I really enjoyed seeing your interaction with everybody there, Ron, where everybody just, they just think you're the bee's knees, buddy. they're talking about your book. They're talking about your speaking engagements. And just so many people know who you are and really appreciate what you do for the law enforcement community.
Well, you know, I feel that I've really been blessed over all the years and not only being able to serve my country and serve my community, but also to help the new law enforcement trainers as they come up through the ranks and, enhance the professionalism and the quality of law enforcement training throughout the United States and also internationally, because this is an international association of law enforcement trainers.
Well, and it's really fascinating to me to be able to walk through the venue and see all of the new training equipment and the new ways that officers can be trained. It just grows by leaps and bounds every year, and the innovations that people come out with and the types of suits and the types of vests and the types of virtual reality.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Yeah. Huh? The virtual reality, the use of force, the Milo things, and the firearms training simulators. And of course, we got an opportunity to launch our brand new ETC forensic company, our online college, so to speak, for all things criminal investigation and forensic related. And I'll tell you what, my hands are sore just shaking hands with people all day. So, I just thought it was so wonderful that so many people came by our booth or saw us in the hallway or something and had something positive to say.
Well, I wish that there was one person who would not have come by and shaken our hands, and that's whoever gave us both cold.
I know. So we're having just a little bit. I know my voice feels so gravelly right now. But this brings to mind where we are in law enforcement today. And I just wanted to share some things because, St. Louis, Missouri is not far from Ferguson, Missouri. And we're coming up to the fifth anniversary of the Michael Brown, so-called hands up, don't shoot incident with Officer Darren Wilson, of which I wrote about extensively in my book.
And which people were buying like crazy while we were there.
And that's much appreciated. But look at what has happened. So, I was kind of remarking to myself about the legacy of the Ferguson incident, because now the Associated Press and some of the mainstream media, they're trying to, just dig this whole thing up again and trying to forward again the false narratives that I do my very best beating down with the forensic facts of what really happened. And that was that Michael Brown was a total thug and he was a bully, and everybody in his community knew it. And they would tell the police privately about that. And of course, we had a beautiful video of where he was basically committing a strong arm robbery with his cohort, Dorian, Johnson, who was the person that forwarded the lie in the first place about Michael Brown having his hands up and begging Darren Wilson not to shoot him.
And which the media bought hook, line, and sinker.
And it never happened. Not one bit of that ever happened. And those people should have been prosecuted. But you know what? Let me talk about my impressions of what the legacy of the Ferguson incident created. And that is, number one, what we call the Ferguson effect now. And there's been a couple of vetted studies out there talking about the low morale that was created by groups like Black Lives Matter, which was a George Soros you know, funded organization and the complicit mainstream media, and just what has happened in the law enforcement community, because the morale has gone down steadily. It is harder to find police officers to do police work. It's harder to find applicants for the job of police officer. And these days, who would really want to be a police officer? And, you know, we have a son that's a police officer in California, and we worry about that young man every single day. And he's been on the job for 10 years. And it hasn't gotten any easier for him and his brothers and sisters behind the badge.
Well, I think actually, Ron, it definitely hasn't gotten easier. I think it's continues to get more difficult, and it continues to lack the support needed from the city governments where the officers work, and it continues to lack it continues to have the false narratives put out about the officers, and officers are continually and more being attacked.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, that Ferguson incident happened in 2014, and here we are 5 years hence, and we see each year an increase on officers being murdered, especially officers being murdered by firearms. And so far in 2019, we've had 26 murdered in the line of duty and 14 by firearms. And as a matter of fact, while we were at the conference, we had lost another law enforcement officer, with two other law enforcement officers in separate incidents being seriously wounded. And that's a problem. And the growing problem, Linda, as you and I well know, is the dynamic of officers committing suicide. And you know, as I told you, I lost one of my good friends and colleagues at the San Jose Police Department just this last week, who retired, moved up to Idaho, and committed suicide just this week. So we're seeing a tremendous increase in police officers being killed, but also first responders. I mean, firefighters committing suicide. And we've got a firefighter boy, boy ourselves. And that, to me, is surprising.
Well, I think that there's a whole lot of pressure on everybody that are first responders, and I don't think that they have the support that they have known in the past, you know, from the communities. So I know that when we moved to Texas and when our firefighter son moved to Texas, I know that he is much better received in Texas as a firefighter than he was in California. They have a lot more support for their first responders in Texas than we were used to having in California. But just in general, again, we go back to the false narratives that are put out, and our first responders, they don't have the respect they used to have. You know, when we were kids, Ron, we just looked up to the police and to the firefighters. I mean, they were just people that you really wanted to emulate in life, and that were, you know, just those people that you look up to as a kid. And now, you know, the parents and the way that the kids are being taught is so disrespectful. And there was an incident just recently where some officers were at a school.
A middle school
basketball game. And some of the kids got into a fight, and somebody called the police. So the police come to respond, and 90 students surrounded these couple of officers
and,
there.
And these are 7th, 8th, and 9th graders, because it's a middle school.
Right, and they were cursing at the officers, and they were threatening the officers, and they had a call for backup. And I just can't even imagine this. 90 kids in a middle school with the disrespect to our law enforcement officers. And I just have to say that it always boggles my mind, because every single one of these people, when they are in trouble, who do they call?
Oh, sure, they call the police. And, you know, this is just abject bad parenting.
It is.
Okay, it's reckless parenting. Because when you create a false narrative with your children that police are the bad guys, those kids pay attention to you, and they act untoward with the police when they're encountered by the police. And when you get resistance like that, that can lead to people being harmed.
Well, and that is the parents'
duty,
ultimate responsibility. Well, exactly. If their exactly. child gets harmed, doing something like playing with a fake gun and pointing it at an officer.
Well, Tamir Rice.
Tamir Rice.
There you
exactly.
go. My case in Cleveland, Ohio.
Or doing something like these students did. I mean, if my kid had been one of those kids at that middle school and I was at that basketball game, I would have dragged him by his ear out of there.
I mean, there is
no way that would have happened, that they would disrespect a police officer. So this is on the parents, and it's one of the things that we talked about with a number of people at this law enforcement conference, Ron, that people from attorneys to trainers to officers to all kinds of different people, to vendors and suppliers. And, you know, really the theme is the same. It's you know, hey, you know, we are doing our best out here to protect society. And, man, it's hard right now.
You know, it would have been so interesting for people that are civilians to come to the ILETA conference and just meet the quality of men and women that are our law enforcement trainers in the United States and internationally. Because I love coming here. You know, I've been a member of this organization since it began. You know, I've given many seminars and speeches here, and I am constantly impressed by the quality of people, and I feel so blessed to be associated with these good men and women that give so much back to their community. And they're all, you know, dejected about this continuation of the media and our politicians. And I'm so appreciative of you writing that article last week on America Out Loud about the dysfunctional politician being like dysfunctional parents and us voters being like their children, because that's exactly what these trainers were saying. And it just goes to the heart of everything. Let me talk about, along with this type of thing, let's talk about our favorite state that we love to hate, and that's California. And now we've had a couple of what they believe are controversial police shootings. And so now the governor and the attorney general want to change the laws in the state of California with respect to how officers use force, and specifically deadly force. And I just read their assembly bill. There's a couple out there. One is a horrible bill that is being forwarded by the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, which is just ridiculous. And then there's another bill, and I think it's called SB 282 or something like that. And the bill number isn't important. But what I noticed that was important, that struck me, is what they're trying to do. So they're really trying to narrow down the use of deadly force and our guidelines, which, by the way, have already been set by the United States Supreme Court, and federal law trumps state law every single time. Okay, and it's the difference between reasonable force or objectively reasonable force as defined by the United States Supreme Court, as opposed to what the state of California wants, and that's necessary force. Two different things. But what struck me about this, and this is the hypocrisy of our politicians in California, is that they're saying, well, police need more training. That's what they need. They need more training. They need more de-escalation training. They need more use of force training. They need more of this, more of that. Let me tell you what, the people that need de-escalation training are the public. And what don't you get in school? De-escalation training, anger management training, and then teaching kids how to respect the rule of law and law enforcement, which is not even taught anymore in school. The next thing that bothers me is, where is that money going to come from? Because in the Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training in California, what we call POST, is no different than some of these other states that we have in the United States, a commission that monitors law enforcement training and makes recommendations. They steal, meaning the legislature, steal money out of the coffers that is meant specifically for law enforcement officers to be trained in the state of California, and that state training budget for law enforcement is becoming bankrupt because they keep stealing that money from these poor officers. So how the heck are they going to get trained? And what do they take that money? They give it to illegal aliens.
Well, absolutely. Okay. But this is not just in California. It's nationwide. And what we find is that we don't have enough money in any of the coffers for training officers. And that is a huge problem, because the people who give the money for the training are generally the politicians within that city. And where it used to be that a police chief was an independent person of the politicians, then they changed everything, where now that they're really pawns of the politicians, because now that's who controls them. So it's really changed the whole paradigm of law enforcement, and it needs to go back to the way it was, where that police chief is an independent police chief. He can be elected by the people or appointed. But what they've done by making them, let's just say in the city of Los Angeles, for example, you know, appointed by somebody like Garcetti, who then makes that police chief
a puppet
of
right.
his,
right.
And that doesn't do any of us any good, and it's changed the whole face of law enforcement. And if you want to say that it's changed for the better, you're wrong. You're totally wrong, and it has not changed for the better, and it has made the disrespect worse. And they've taken the money for the training, which is why you and I felt that we needed to start a company where we could provide training for law enforcement as well as for forensic investigators at a much more reasonable price, so that more officers can get more training and be able to be safer out in the street, and therefore make the public safer, because when the police are not safe, the public is not safe.
You know, I absolutely agree. And the thing that I really like about our ETC forensic company is that not only can agencies, you know, buy into the classes and everything, but individual officers apart from the agency can buy classes just like any other school, you know, like any other college or any other university. And it's so cheap, and you can get it on your cell phone, you can get it on a tablet, you can get it anywhere you want as long as you have an internet connection. And I think that's the future of law enforcement training. I mean, you're always going to have to do physical
sure.
training, but just how many times do you think that we go to training as law enforcement professionals and we sit in a classroom and we listen to somebody like me, you know, talking? And but you have to drive there, and you have to, you know, spend money and maybe stay in a hotel, and this comes right to you even on your smartphone. So I just thought, you know, what a great idea, and I think it's really gonna catch on. Hey, how about a cup of coffee?
I'm ready.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
I want to talk just a moment more about the police officers, because, you know, I'm just such a proponent of law enforcement officers, and I just think that they are invaluable to us and that they do us such a service. And of course, like any other profession, there's a few bad ones here and there, but by far, the vast, vast, vast majority are really, really good, highly trained people that are out there to do what they're supposed to do to protect and serve the public. And when I hear people like Black Lives Matter or, gosh, I heard somebody a few weeks back in a restaurant talking about having no police officers anymore, but we should just have people take turns at being police officer for a few weeks at a time.
That's what we need.
Yeah. And
let's just throw all that training and experience out the window. Let's just let's have a volunteer society
sure.
of police officers. And let's give them guns. Let's give them everything and just put them out there.
So you have to wonder, what are people thinking? Because believe me, those are the first people that are going to call an officer when they need one. But let's just imagine for a moment that we didn't have police officers. What kind of society do you think that we would have? There are always going to be criminals. There are always going to be people that are going to take advantage of others, that are going to harm others, that are going to sexually abuse others, that are going to steal and rob
and murder.
And what will you do? We would have a society ruled by the likes of MS-13 type people. We cannot have that kind of chaos and exist as a society.
Yeah, you know, I agree. When people criticize the police officers to an extreme, you know, I turn back around and I say to them, okay, so in your perfect world, what would policing look like to you? And you always get a deer in the headlights look. Okay, because they don't have a plan. You know, all these things are nice to say. Oh, well, you know, we need to have this type of society and that type of society. What we need to have is a society where people are protected, where people feel safe and secure, whether they're in their residences or whether they're driving in a car or whether they're walking down the street at any time of the day or night. That's what we need. And we need people to protect our rule of law, or we would go into sheer chaos. And if you look at societies that don't have a rule of law, or you have corruption, or you have a lack of people that protect the rule of law, look at these countries. We can name all sorts of countries.
All sorts of countries.
And they are communist countries, socialist countries, oppressive countries. And the people...
Or corrupt countries.
Or corrupt countries.
Right.
And the people are literally hostages in their own countries. And where do they want to go? They want to go to the United States.
Right. But what's happening in the United States, which I find really distressing, is that our politicians are dragging us further and further in that direction. They are taking power away from the police officers as though the police officers are some sort of a Gestapo type of officers, and they're not that at all. And they when they take those things away from the officers that make them be safe, that allow us to be safe, they make all of us less safe. When our politicians release felons from prison, when they will not have illegal aliens arrested and deported after committing crimes, for me, I wouldn't let them in the first place. If they're illegal, period. So what they're doing, what our politicians are doing to us, is making us as Americans less safe. They want to take our guns. They want to take the authorities of the police officers. Every step that they're taking is going away from making us more safe and not towards making us more safe. And people need to understand that, and we need to wake up to it.
No, you know, you've hit a key point. For all the altruistic ideas that people have, and most of them are on the new progressive left, none of those ideas are good ideas. They're all bad ideas. And they look at California. I keep picking on California because obviously I know California and I did my whole policing career in California. And you take a look at what has happened in that state, and it's become an absolute cesspool full of criminals. A great example. They bamboozled the public into passing Prop 47, into passing Prop 109. And what did that do? Because they wanted to, you know, stop the overcrowding of prisons, they started releasing all these violent felons, not calling them violent felons, but they were, and all sorts of sexual offenders, releasing them out into the community by the tens of thousands. Then they've changed the law where police officers can't even arrest people on outstanding felony warrants anymore. They've got to turn around. They can stop them. They can actually arrest them, but they can't take them to jail. What they have to do is write them a ticket. And then those people that commit offenses and are arrested for misdemeanor offenses, they have to release them from jail pretty much right away. Whether they qualify for release on their own recognizance or whatever, they've got to release all those people. So all those people come back out on the street, and it's just a continuing cycle of victimization.
Well, right. They just reoffend immediately. And and even more so because there's no disincentive for them to reoffend.
Exactly.
They know that they're going to get a ticket. They know that they're not going to jail.
Correct.
So they just come back out and do it again. If somebody just robbed you on the street at gunpoint, or robbed you in your home, or did a home invasion, now they're right back on the street to do it to your neighbor. And that is what is so very dangerous. And I don't think that, honestly, I just don't think that the public understands what has been done.
Well, I think a lot of the public is disengaged. And the reason is that either they've just given up on the political system, and you can't blame a lot of them, number one. Or number two, they're so busy working to make ends meet that they can't engage like the protesters do that have really got nothing to do. And so, sure, let's get them out there and let's have them protest. But this is an extremely dangerous situation. And one of the things that you and I harp on, and I'm seeing this increasingly in places like California, Linda, speaking of dangerous things, and you and I have mentioned this a couple of times, is politicians' ability to circumvent the voting public's decisions at the ballot box. And California is an excellent example of that when we come to the death penalty. So I don't think people know this, but the people in the state of California have voted to keep the death penalty 11 separate times. And yet, just this last week, Gavin Newsom gets up in front of the cameras and says, well, I'm going to have a moratorium on the death penalty. I'm basically going to suspend it for an indefinite period of time. And so literally, you saw film of correctional officers at San Quentin, which is where death row is, and we have almost 750 vile murderers and multiple murderers on death row. And what they're doing is they're carrying out, the lethal injection, gurney and all of that stuff, and going to put it in a storage facility. And now, what are these people going to do? Okay, what are they going to be in prison for life without possibility of parole? What could possibly happen? And the thing that really irked me, or frothed my socks, so to speak, was that I'm listening to Gavin Newsom talk, and he's saying, well, I did this. One of the reasons I did this is because my daughter asked me, why are we killing people? And I didn't want to have to answer her. What he really should be saying is, look, sweetheart, let me tell you why these people are on death row. Let me tell you what they did and explain to that child. You think he would do that? No, because it's disgusting what those people did and how they tortured, maimed, raped, and killed, people, including multiple people. But he just wants to take all of that and throw that away, including the millions of people in the state of California that voted in favor of keeping the death penalty.
11 times. And this is what, again, is wrong with the politicians, is that they just think that they're all of that and they're over and above the people. They are supposed to be the servants of the people.
Correct.
And they are not supposed to be the kings of the people.
Why even vote then? Why should we even vote? Why do we even have initiatives and spend millions of dollars on these initiatives and go through the process of voting if you're going to get someone like the governor of the state of California, or any other governor for that matter, to overturn what the laws are? You know what? It's the same thing with sanctuary state policy. It's the same thing with these sanctuary city policies that are, in opposition to federal law.
Well, and it's the same thing just with letting people pour over the border. It's crazy. And, we just, while we were at the conference on law enforcement and training, there were some Border Patrol people here, and they said, we absolutely need the wall. I mean, they are the people on the front lines of the border, and they absolutely see what's going on, and they say that there's not even a question. The problem is that these people are dealing from places that they know nothing about. If Gavin Newsom's wife or that little daughter had something horrible happen to them in the way that all of these other victims have, he might have a different attitude. But you just can't be a politician and be able to do whatever you want. They're supposed to be the servants of the people. We have lost that. And we, the people, are not making them accountable by voting them out of office. We just continue to vote for them as they walk all over us.
Well, you're exactly right. And I'm sure that if I went to Gavin Newsom's governor residence, it would be surrounded by a wall. And it's also protected by the California Highway Patrol, which provides security, executive security, to the governor's office. But it's just like Nancy Pelosi, who lives out in Pacific Palisades in San Francisco in a beautiful mansion overlooking the Golden Gate Bridge in the entry to San Francisco Bay. And she's got like 10-foot high stucco walls all around her residence. And a few months ago, some woman climbed over that wall and did a video in there, and Nancy totally freaked out about that. Well, Nancy, what do you think about, you know, hundreds and thousands of illegal aliens and MS-13 people and sex traffickers and everybody, drug dealers, going across our border into our country, you know, poisoning us by the tens of thousands and trafficking in children and women and beheading people and stabbing them 100 times and setting them on fire? Just what do you expect? And you know, this comes to mind, and you and I, living in Texas, we see this all the time. Right now, our Border Patrol detention facilities in Texas have reached their maximum, and now the Border Patrol is being forced to let people out. And they're going to disappear into the community, into the United States, and 98% of them never appear in court. And this is exactly what the design of the new progressive left is.
Well, it is, because these people end up voting illegally and we do nothing about it. In fact, the progressive left wants us to have no voter ID. They want us to have, you know, DMV sign you up.
Well, they want illegal aliens to vote. They want to give them the right to vote.
So, and beyond that, they want to add people to the Supreme Court on their side. They want to they want to change the rules about election rules, about
the Electoral College.
They, yeah, they want to change everything so that the outcome is only one way, and that is to them. And America will just cease to exist as we know it. And maybe some people are happy about that, and I just can't tell you how stupid I feel that is. We are uninformed and don't know what we're asking for here.
Well, you know, I loved it because Brazilian President Bolsonaro was just interviewed by Fox News just the other day, and they were asking about how does he feel about President Trump, and what about the wall, and what about President Trump's stand on anti-socialist stand. And I just enjoyed listening to an educated man with a lot of experience in a Hispanic country talking about the fact that President Trump is 100% right. He said building the wall is 100% the right thing to do. Having extreme vetting for refugees that come into our country is the right thing to do. And people that would forward or resonate with the socialist agenda need to be educated on what a socialist agenda really is, because Brazil is right next door to Venezuela. And they see this all the time. They see what's happened to a corrupt, rich elite socialist government controlling the people, disarming the people, controlling the people, and one of the richest nations in the world with respect to resources, which is oil, mm-hmm, is in extreme poverty.
Well, and people are starving to death, and people are in just dire straits there. So, yes, it's a horrible thing, and the fact that we even would entertain this thought or speak out loud about it in America is just shocking to me. It's shocking to me, and it's shocking to so many people that we would even be entertaining this discussion. People don't know what they would be in for, and I don't know how they could even possibly think that it would be some sort of a better system than what we have.
Well, you know, and if you want to look at where the future is, just go back to Europe, and you and I are frequent, you know, visitors in Europe. We don't go to France, but we study France. We don't want to go to France. I think people that want to go to France are crazy. But you take a look at what Macron did in France, and his predecessor, I don't remember his name, and how that leftist government, with their open borders mentality, have completely ruined that country. And immigrants all over the place, no vetting process whatsoever, terrorism. Now they have riots every weekend, and you have 75% taxes. They're tossing the old people out with the garbage. It's just absolutely disgraceful. And the police have completely lost control of what's going on in that country. And they are moving as close to socialism as a progressive first world nation could. And how's that working out for them?
Well, and it's, you know, it's kind of getting to be the same way in Germany a little bit too, where they've let just way too many people in. I mean, the whole face of Europe has changed, and not for the better. And we're doing the same thing here in the United States. And I don't know if it's too late to stop the forward progression of that. But we really, really need to think about it in this country, and we need to be involved and active in how we vote and what we know, and, you know, understand what it is that we're asking for.
Yeah, a lot of this.
And the consequences of those things.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And a lot of this is not rocket science, but people absolutely have to educate themselves. And I think one of the things they need to educate themselves in immediately, the two things are, number one, socialism. What is socialism really all about? Take a look at the socialist countries. And I think, you know, God bless them, President Trump and his administration need to be doing some things where they're putting out some ads or educating the people, buying some public service time or whatever, and educating the people on the difference between the different ideologies between capitalism, socialism, communism, these different governmental models and economic models. And the next thing that this country needs to do is educate themselves on what the Electoral College is all about, what it is and what it isn't. And you know, of all the networks that are out there in the United States, the only network that educates the American public on things like the Bill of Rights, how government works, the rule of law, and the Electoral College is One America News.
Yeah, and they do that, and that's a great thing, and it's a great public service, and it's absolutely a station worth watching.
And how about our second cup of coffee?
I'm ready.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hey, Lynn, now that we're enjoying our second cup of coffee, let's switch it up a little bit, and I've got some good news.
Okay, love good news.
Well, this is an invention for people who are deaf and use sign language. And I don't know if you know this, but about 70 million people worldwide are deaf and use sign language. So we have these two young men from MIT, go figure, right? Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where the real brain, the Mensa people,
yep,
you know, hang out. And I don't know their last names, but their names are Thomas and Navid. And what these two young men did was they invented some special electronic gloves. So you put these gloves on, and they have got sensors in the hands and fingers, right, and palms, and going all the way up to the wrist. And so what the gloves do is they translate sign language into verbal speech or text messages. So what happens is that there are sensors in the hands and the wrists, and they measure movement. So when a person is signing, obviously they're using their hands, they're moving their hands, they're touching their body, they're touching their hands, they're, you know, moving their fingers in certain ways to make words. Well, there is a small computer, and the sensors in the gloves transmit using Bluetooth to a small computer. And the computer has a language device that translates and uses a speaker. And as the person is signing, the translation is moving the sign language into verbal language. And also, if you want, like on a computer or whatever, into a text message for the individual. And it's just absolutely amazing how you would even think about how to make this. And so Thomas and David won the first prize, which is $10,000 for their invention. And I watched a video on it, and I was absolutely amazed.
I heard it when you were watching it, and it was fascinating to hear. And you know, there are so many good things that people are doing in the world of medicine, and that's really a good thing. And another one is that they just recently have cured their second case of HIV. So they have a virologist by the name of Anna Marie Wensing, who has been working with stem cell research having to do with HIV. And so they have just confirmed that their second case has been cured. And this really, I mean, is a breakthrough, and it's going to just help so many people around the world.
You know, Linda, you've said it on several occasions, and I absolutely agree with you, that for every malady, you know, every type of infirmity, every type of problem that humans experience, you know, cancer, dementia, Alzheimer's, all of these different things, there is some cure for it on this planet, and we just have to find those cures.
Well, and you know what's interesting when you say that, and I do
say that.
I do say it all the time, but it just made me think that also for those maladies, as well as a cure, there's a cause for them.
Correct.
So it is the cause for, say, Alzheimer's or cancer, things that we are putting into our environment or into our food.
Absolutely.
I don't know, but
absolutely,
I do believe that there are cures for most of these things. Now, that being said, nobody lives forever, and we all are going to die of something. So, you know, we have to be practical. But, you know, for people that it's way before their time to have these cures is wonderful. And, you know, here's another study that just came out that I really thought all along, and I never questioned it. But, you know, so many people over the years have been pretty hysterical about getting their kids vaccinated because they do believe it causes autism or different kinds of reactions. And certainly anything that you put in your body can cause a reaction to somebody. You know, people are allergic to peanuts, and
right.
I'm not, but they are, and that's a real thing.
Right. Well, I know we have a relative, and I mean, close family member, and he is allergic to peanuts, and we have to be so careful, right, when we go out to restaurants and stuff,
true.
Right?
Well, and look, and me, I'm allergic to NSAIDs or aspirin.
You have some problems with Chardonnay wine, too.
Unfortunately. But a study of 650,000 children getting measles vaccines has shown that the data shows that there is no risk of getting autism from getting that particular vaccine. And it's so important because we have been experiencing a rebirth of measles lately for a couple of reasons, and one is because people are not vaccinating their kids.
Well, I absolutely agree with you, but and we're also getting them from people coming into this country that that don't have vaccination programs, and so we're, like you said, we're, you know, polio, we're seeing other diseases, we're seeing typhus, all sorts of things that we shouldn't be seeing here in the United States. Because we've really become sort of an unhealthy country, and we have to do these vetting processes. services when we bring people into this country, and then also the people that are already in this country, like we have the homelessness problem, but with that, we have a lack of sanitation, and that's what's bringing back these things like hepatitis C and
typhus
right. and things that, I mean, typhus, for God's sakes, that's a Middle Ages disease, you know,
right.
like a black plague, for God's sakes.
But there are areas of the world that have it,
and that's correct.
And they're bringing it here. And
that's
again, this goes back to controlling our borders.
Well, let me talk about, we're talking about healthy, unhealthy
yeah.
things. So let's talk a little bit about unhealthy things and healthy things. And what I'm going to talk about right now, Linda, because you are usually the person during Talking While Married that are bringing up these lists. And so I'm going to switch around on you, and I've got a couple of lists.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So let's talk about the 2019 Dirty Dozen list of fruits and vegetables that upon testing they are finding have got many more times the level of pesticides that human beings, you know, would be ingesting, you know, normally.
That they would okay? want to ingest, sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about fruits first of all. Okay. What do you think the top fruit is? And it's one that you really like. I know I really like it, but it's the number one on the Dirty Dozen list of dirty pesticide fruits.
Well, I think I know this one because I've heard it before and because it really holds on to the pesticides once you spray them. And that's a strawberry?
That's 100% right.
Awesome.
Okay. And then, you know, and we like these things. And it, now I'm a little bit concerned about it, right? I may go organic on you, Linda.
Just wash it.
Okay. So number two is actually a vegetable, and it's spinach.
Oh, I like spinach.
I love spinach. I had it today for an omelet. So the next one is actually an extremely popular vegetable that is, you know, you see it more in salads and things like that, and that is kale. It's the number three, and they have found that kale absorbs pesticides a lot more than other vegetables, and that's why it's number three.
That must be why it's not on my favorites list.
Okay, and number four is something that you and I used to grow on our ranch in Temecula, California, and that's nectarines.
I love nectarines. But, you know, the thing about nectarines is that it's got a skin on the outside, so I would think it's safer because you're eating what's on the inside. So I'm okay if they have it on the outside, although I'm not okay with it at all. And by the way, we never one time sprayed
anything.
Everything on our ranch was organic.
Exactly.
And so tasty. But, you know, a nectarine, I don't know. It's unless that stuff's going through the skin and into the actual, you know, pulp of that nectarine, okay. I wouldn't worry about
it. Well, you know, the one thing that I do miss, Lynn, in living in Texas, because the only thing we grow on our ranch in Texas is limestone, okay? But on our ranch in Temecula, you know, we had an avocado ranch and we had pitted fruit, beautiful orchard of every kind of pitted fruit that you could think of. And then you did an amazing job as a gardener. And we had all the vegetables. I mean, we never went to the store except for maybe mushrooms or something. We had our honeydew melons. We had our watermelons. We had all the salad.
Tomatoes,
zucchinis,
oh my God. Onions. Yeah,
it was amazing.
Artichoke.
Four different types of lemons and also four different types of oranges.
Yeah.
So that was great. Okay, so the next one, speaking of something that was in your pitted fruit, and that is apples.
And homegrown apples are wonderful.
They are. And the next one is, and we had grapes and peaches and
see, all these are
cherries.
Soft skin type of items where you could see that the pesticide could, you know, penetrate.
Yeah. Number nine on the hit list is pears. Number 10 is tomatoes. Number 11 is celery. Now, we didn't grow celery. And number 12 is something else that we didn't grow, and that's potatoes.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go back to, I tried celery one time, but it didn't work. But I'm going to go back to those tomatoes. When I was a kid, and my mom used to plant tomatoes, they always had those great big green horned
right.
worms on them, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
And And when we planted tomatoes, for all the years that we did tomatoes, not one time did I ever see one of those. And I think that's so interesting because I thought that they just came along with the tomatoes.
Well, you know, I think it just depends on where the heck you live, right? And maybe we just lived in an area that we didn't have that type of insects. Okay, now are you ready for the clean fruits and vegetables?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And you're going to love the first one because that's what we grew, and that's avocados.
Oh, I was going to say zucchini?
No, we grew a ton of zucchini. But anyway, avocados is number one. Another one is your favorite vegetable, and that's sweet corn.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Number three is pineapples.
I like pineapples, too.
And number four is sweet peas, but they have here listed frozen sweet peas.
Well, that doesn't come out of the ground frozen unless you live in Nebraska or something. So
I'm just reading the list, Lynn. I'm just reading the list. Something that we used to grow a ton of, and that's onions, especially sweet onions.
Onions are so good fresh out of the ground.
And then papaya.
I love those.
And number seven, eggplant.
I love those too.
And number eight is something that it took us a couple of years to grow, but once we started growing it, it just went crazy wild, and that's asparagus.
Okay.
And then number nine is kiwi.
Okay. It's okay. That's okay. It's really good in a martini.
All right. And number 10 is cabbage. I'm not a fan. And number 11 is something I'm definitely not a fan of, and that's cauliflower because I can't taste it. Okay. And number 12 are cantaloupes. Number 13 is broccoli. Number 14 is something that I love to eat. I cook it almost every night in some one fashion or another, and that's mushrooms. And the last one are honeydew melons.
Yeah, and we grew a lot of those on a ranch, and I do miss that, but it also was a lot of work, and I'm kind of grateful with all the traveling we do not to have that much work. Although, with spring coming along now, I'm seriously thinking about getting some zucchini planted and at least have some zucchini and onions going.
Well, you've been doing a beautiful job around the house and especially on the back patio with planting all your, you know, your spring flowers. And, you know, speaking of spring in Texas, I mean, it's just absolutely amazing the blue bonnets that you see everywhere. And as a matter of fact, it's kind of like the poppies in California where you would pull off like Highway 15 and it was growing all up in the mountains and you'd see all the lines of cars and people wanted to get their pictures with their kids in the poppies. Well, the same thing happens with Texas with our state flower, which is the blue bonnet.
Yep. And it's beautiful. And the flowers in California, I was just there and I'll be back there again next week. The flowers are the most I have ever seen in the state ever.
Well, I think this is the most rain that you've seen in the state for maybe 10 years.
Yeah. Yep. So good. Well, I like those. And, you know, it's something to think about when you're, you know, picking out your fruit and vegetables to get some that are, you know, don't have a lot of pesticides or go organic, or make sure you just wash them really well.
And I think that's the best tip of all. And just make sure that you thoroughly wash, you know, all of these fruits and vegetables and be careful where you buy them.
Well, I have a little list of my own and I'm going to do it really quickly. So you know how our favorite people, actors and actresses in Hollywood, they make a lot of money at what they do. But some of them really, you know, make all that money and then they lose it for one reason or another. So I'm going to tell you about some famous actors and actresses who are broke.
Oh, okay.
So first one is Gary Busey. And why is he broke? Even though he's made millions of dollars, he filed for Chapter 7 in 2012 because he owed a lot of money to the IRS and to creditors. So overspending there, Gary.
Yeah, some bad money management.
Another one that really, really overspent is Heidi Montag, who, you know, was the reality star on The Hills and married Spencer Pratt. She had lots and lots of plastic surgery, and she would spend like $1 million on clothing and on handbags and just really, really spent a lot of money. And today, she has a net worth of about $20,000.
Wow. You know, I know on all the surgery that she had, she spent over $100,000 on that surgery alone. But, you know, those people, they just, especially with Montag, you know, you would see her in, like, People magazine, and you'd see her on TV all the time, and it was Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, and, you know, that whole social media crowd. So I could see how she just blew through all that money.
Yeah, and another one, kind of the bad reputation kind of thing got to Lindsay Lohan, where nobody wanted to work with her anymore. So all the money that she made, she went through. She also, you know, had a drug and alcohol
right.
issues. And
I think that was a big deal.
Back taxes. And so today she has a net worth of about $500,000, but that was from a high of multiple millions of dollars.
And, you know, does that also include just property they own? Because she might even have less money than that. If she has a house that's worth a few hundred thousand,
well, I think when they say their net worth, it includes that. Yeah.
Sure.
So then you have Kelly Rutherford, who really lost her millions of dollars by legal battles because she was married to a German man who took the kids off to Germany, and she had to keep fighting for years to try to get her kids back.
What was she famous
divorce.
About? I don't recognize her name.
She was in the soap opera Generations.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but she really had a hard way to go with trying to get her kids back, and she ultimately, you know, did not succeed at that, and her kids are living overseas. MC Hammer.
Oh, yeah, the
MC
singer.
Hammer?
Yep, the rapper singer.
Yeah, he at one point had, his worth was $33 million, and again, just overspent, built a house worth $30 million and sold it for $7 million, so that was not
Holy
a great investment.
Cow. Wow.
He still has a debt, even though his net worth now is $1.5 million, he has a debt to the government of $800,000. So,
yeah.
You know, just you go a long way down. You go a long way up and you go a long way down. But it's all about managing your money if you're going to get that famous. Mike Tyson's another one who went through divorces and being in prison. Lost all that money that he made in boxing. Okay? And well, my last one is a guy that we all know really well, and I actually have enjoyed in a lot of movies, and that's Johnny Depp. And Johnny Depp was one of the highest paid actors ever in Hollywood.
Well, you know, he had that whole Pirates of the Caribbean franchise.
Right, and he's out of that. But he, you know, he's had really some odd behavioral problems, and then he has his divorce, and then he has been sued, and he's had to pay, you know, lawsuits off, and also he, you know, would buy things like $30,000 a month worth of wine, and he just really
spent...
But he
had a mega yacht, too.
Yeah,
didn't he have a big mega yacht?
Spent himself into oblivion. So, you know, now he's pretty in debt at this time, which is really too bad, because he's a talented guy, but he kind of went off the deep end there, and I think sometimes when you have too much and you get bored, that's what happens.
Well, I'll tell you what, words to live by. Well, what a fascinating conversation this evening.
It's been fun.
And I'm glad that we're back from the conference, the ILEADA conference. It was just a pleasure to have you with me. And, you know, I look forward to our next adventure.
Well, and we are going off in different directions again for a little bit, and then hooking back up in California in a short time. And, you know, we'll just see where life takes us in the next few days.
We're just two ships passing in the night, young
Sometimes
lady.
Sometimes we are. But since we're not passing in the night right now, let's get to bed.
All right.